Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coffee and Cream with Rogers and Benning on Hail Varsity Radio. Here is the sports editor for the Omaha World Herald, Sam McEwen.
That's fine.
Sam McEwen.
We're gonna throw the ball, and you just stand back there and throw it where you want to go.
You know, that kind of thing.
Sam McEwen.
Are you guys going? Sure.
Now, Sam McEwen.
Hey, top of the hour here on Coffee and Cream in the Morning on Hail Varsity Radio, powered by Currency, Damon Benning, and Drew Rogers. As we always do, we have a great lineup of guests. Brady Altman waiting in the wing. We have Michael Lee at 9 o'clock. But before we get to either of them, we always kick off Monday with Sam McEwen, sports editor over at the Omaha World Herald, at SW McEwen OWH on Twitter. Sam, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good morning, man. Did you stay relatively dry? Or did the old yard get the much-needed waterfall?
I think we got 2 inches down here. So, yeah, it got
that's
wet.
Good.
You made up for it in a hurry, right?
Yeah, that's right. It looks a little gnarly today. It looks like rough from the U.S. Open, so we're going to have to mow. But here's the thing. If you mow too much, then it grows real fast, and then you're mowing even more. So you got to be judicious in May and June, so trying to be judicious about how often I mow.
Sam, you have no idea how much you're talking to two knuckleheads who constantly talk about their grass. So this is totally in our wheelhouse, and believe me, we know very little.
Yeah, we just, Kentucky bluegrass,
we just know that we talk about grass and how to take care of yards all the time.
Well, that's good. I don't know that much about it either. I'd have to ask my dad. He knows a lot, so... I just pull out a mower every so often and mulch about, but I'll probably get that done today after whatever happens today in the sports world.
Mm. Sam, yeah, let's talk about I guess just what's right in front of us. It's camp week, camp month. You had official visits over the weekend, some pretty big names. And, you know, every reaction is relatively the same. Players fall for rule, they fall for the school, and they fall for just the passion of football in the state. But my question to you is, when will we know those qualities are enough to fall for a football team that hasn't won? Outside of the fact of the obvious, wait till they commit, and then you'll know that they fell there. Like, when will there, or if will there be a day where we can just say that's enough to sell the place?
Well, Nebraska's always gotten kids based on the things that you just mentioned. Nebraska's facilities, even though they're a little old, are generally palatial. And they have a great support system. And so when you come to Nebraska, especially kids who aren't from the Midwest, you know, they come here and they're like, wow, I mean, this is really, really well done. And man, they've got their academics and they got all their ducks in a row and it's really impressive. And so, like, they'll always get a couple of kids based on that alone. I'll give you an example. I think Riley Van Poppel came to Nebraska last year largely based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think it was, my dad, no. And I don't think it was, well, this is the best team I could play for. It wasn't. I mean, he could have gone to Michigan. So I think a lot of times what will happen is kids will get here and they're like, man, I really like this place, and this is the place for me. They treat me like a king, and they do. So, you know, hopefully what happens is eventually the players, reciprocate and turn that great treatment into winning. And, I mean, when I say it's a balance, it's truly a balance. And it's something that I know on the men's sports side of Nebraska, they're trying to figure out. They're trying to figure out how what appear to be pretty darn good recruits or pretty darn good players can't win. And they're treated really well. So, like, you can't sit there and say, well, the resources aren't there, and if only we had this. That is not the issue. The issue and some of the things that get bandied about are the players treated too well? Are they do they understand, you know, what they've got to do in order to do X, Y, and Z? So Nebraska's always going to recruit well. They're going to get recruits out of this weekend. I know Mario Buford set his decision date. I would expect them to come to Nebraska. They're going to get a few other guys that they just host. The question is, do those guys translate into victories?
Sam, kind of off topic, globally speaking, where do you come out kind of deciding between Ted Carter, kind of the involvement? We've had the sit-downs, the round table, the university system, the powers that be, kind of directly being correlated with the athletic department. Uncharted may be kind of a strong term, but do you get the sense of urgency on why Carter may want to be so closely connected with what's going on in the athletic department?
I believe there's a belief that there's a correlation between the success of Nebraska athletics, specifically Nebraska football, and interest in school. So enrollment at UNL is down. There once upon a time was a goal to get to 30,000 students. They're nowhere near that. It's gone down. Enrollment has gone down since, I think, the peak, and I can't remember what year, 2014 or something like that. Now, there are reasons for that that are unrelated to UNL's practice or handling of anything, but nevertheless, it's a concern. Obviously, there's a budget crunch. They're gonna suggest a tuition hike as a result. You know, so I think there's a relationship between the front porch of the university. And to be clear, and I kind of put this on Twitter a couple days ago, UNMC is now probably the front porch of the University of Nebraska system.
It might be.
Post-COVID. And it's valued the Big Ten. It's considerable. You know, anybody who says Nebraska's going to leave the Big Ten does not understand the Big Ten's value to UNMC and vice versa. So now, you know, but you want the athletic department. You want the Husker Athletics to be a front porch, and it is in some sports, I suppose. It's certainly become that in track and field in short order because of the head coach that they hired. But you know, I mean, it's not in football and men's basketball and baseball. And I know Carter did an interview with Tom Chattel a couple weeks ago. I know he did one with Tip here recently. And I think there's just a feeling of, and this is true when Hank Bounds was there, of like, Nebraska athletics needs to be in the right place, and things need to be aligned, and they need to be successful in order for the University of Nebraska-Lincoln to maximize its potential as a, you know, in terms of its enrollment and impact across the state. So, I think there's that reason for involvement. I think the new UNL chancellor, chances are good that his part of his job is to focus very intently on what's being done on UNL's campus, and not necessarily getting caught up in athletics. I know there was frustration back in 2014 when Bo Pelini was fired. The Regents didn't really know beforehand. They didn't like that. So obviously, if you control the president, and the president has to sign off on hirings and firings, then you have a direct line. Whereas there had long been sort of a separation where, you know, the chancellor of UNL controlled those things and didn't really have to tell the regents. So I think that's part of how these things are all set up. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it'll pass, the whole thing with the president being the direct oversight. I don't know that it'll be a unanimous vote. I think there's elected regents who really don't care.
Right.
Or do they have to care about Nebraska athletics? They're like, why are we concerning ourselves with this? So there may be a vote that says, I don't really care about this. but we'll see. I'm sure it'll pass. But it may not be unanimous. I don't know. I think it's one of those things that's a passion for a few regions. but maybe not all of them, if that makes sense.
Sam, you wrote a nice piece about the SEC sticking to 8 conference games instead of 9, and it's something that we talked about on the show on Friday, so it's a good chance to kind of reset that with you now. In terms of the impact that it could have or that it will have on the college football expanded playoff for teams outside of the SEC, how do you make light of how everything went down there with what people generalize as the college football's number one conference?
Well, you know, I think within the SEC, it's just remarkable to me that the programs that aren't as good could affect a vote and defy a commissioner because they're worried about not winning 6 games. I mean, you want to talk about a small concern, which is why I don't think it's about that. I think it's A, we don't have to change. Why would we? And B, they want to see if ESPN will give more money. I mean, I'm sure ESPN's like, are you kidding us? Are you kidding me? What? We're going to give you more money? but they might, you know, because I think the SEC is going to play. The bellwether in this is not Nick Saban. It's Kirby Smart. And all of a sudden, you know, Kirby went from, hey, we're playing the toughest schedule in college football about 3 years ago to, well, this is an overrated conversation. I mean, the minute he says that, you're like, well, we know what's really going on here. So obviously they have Georgia as an ally in this discussion, and they're not going to get, you know, Georgia's now the powerful team in the league, and it doesn't matter what Nick Saban thinks. But, you know, I mean, they have never been punished for having 8 conference games. They've always been rewarded. So there's really no reason to change. Like, when those teams play FCS teams in late November, they're not downgraded for it, because as soon as you get ranked in the college football playoff, you almost never move down, unless you're Ohio State 2019, and they wanted to put LSU at the top. But you almost never get moved down for winning. And so, like, it doesn't hurt you to play an FCS team, because by then, you know, everybody's decided how good you are. It doesn't matter what you do in your 10th game of the season. So, you know, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. Yeah, so long as the system is designed to rely on a group of people in a room where we all know that the coaches run it and the coaches decide. You know, everybody looks to the 4 coaches. Who are the 4 best teams? Well, the teams with the most talent and the teams in the SEC, and Clemson's good. Like, that's how it all goes. There's no real independent thought in there. I guarantee you there isn't. Very little. So long as there's 4 coaches deciding that, and those 4 coaches, the thing they value the most is not losing, then nothing's going to change. They're not going to do anything. They're not going to have a formula that alters that. So I don't know why the SEC has to change. I don't think they will until they're forced to by the committee.
Sam, along those lines, in terms of the revenue and the richness of the TV contracts with the SEC network, obviously being a part of what the 4-letter network is doing, you're saying that the SEC is not. Excuse me, because the commissioner is working on behalf of the schools, right? So if the schools are basically saying, we're still making more money than everybody else in college football, we're playing one less conference game. Without that conference game, we don't need the inventory because we're putting ourselves in a position to play for championships. The Big Ten, on the other hand, says, okay, I'd rather make that money from TV and keep the TV inventory in-house, play the 9th game, and have the 14th team in the conference be closer to the 7th team in the conference fiscally, as opposed to having a chance to play for a championship. Is it that easy?
Yeah, I mean, I think,
Because they're still making more money than the Big Ten playing one less conference game.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I,
And they don't have to put their team in harm's way. I think it's a sucky way to do it. But
yeah,
but
that's right. Like I think it's, I mean, it's a sucky way in a sense. Like I understand that there's, somebody sent me over the weekend in response to the column, would you rather play this schedule or this schedule? And I think the schedule they sent me was South Carolina. And it was like, would you rather play South Carolina schedule or Nebraska schedule this upcoming year? And the reality is, South Carolina plays Georgia and Clemson, and Nebraska plays only Michigan. And so, like, what you're doing is you're like, well, what you're boiling it down to is, who are the three best teams on your schedule, and are they better than the three best teams on Nebraska's schedule? That's how people think about those things. And all I'll say is that conference teams know you better, and so, like, you're more liable to lose a game that you wouldn't lose outside of conference in conference because they've been studying you for 5 years and the coaches are there and all those things. And so, like, it's more likely that if South Carolina had to add, say, playing Vanderbilt or Missouri or something, they already played Missouri, but if they had to play, you know, somebody from the West that they don't normally play, its chances are good they would more likely lose a game or two than to play Walker or whatever it is. And so, like, you know, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that the SEC has found a way to do this. I think they care about winning in a way that the Big Ten does not. And it informs, and to be clear, I think the culture of football in the South is just different than the culture of football in the North. And so, like, Michigan is a program that I think has started to catch on to this stuff. But you know, I don't really know that Purdue football or, I don't know, Illinois or Indiana cares about it the same way South Carolina does. We're not talking about the top teams, but we're talking about the mid-tier teams. And so, you know, like, that's the way the SEC rolls. They're trying to protect the number of teams that go to bowl.
Okay, so how much of it is our fault in the media for the narrative, right? Because there were seven teams in the SEC last year with a losing record in conference. There were only four teams in the SEC of the 14 with a winning record, meaning above 500. Like,
right. But
we keep saying, well, it just means more, it just means more. We're not necessarily saying they have better teams, do they? Because I'm not so sure A&M or Auburn or Arkansas. We just watched Arkansas go to how many overtime games with somebody in a bowl game that we would not necessarily call a perennial power. So it's like,
right. How
much of it is we talking about it as though it's something that historically it really isn't. I get the top three or four, or sometimes even only three, but like we talk about the conference in its totality.
Right. I think people define strength and weakness of a conference based on the teams at the top. So if Ohio State and Michigan had both won their playoff game and both had a chance to, then I think the conversation would have been, as the balance of power swung toward Michigan and Ohio State, but they didn't win. You know, Ohio State played about as well as it could, and they lost by one. And Michigan didn't played horribly and lost by seven or six. I can't remember what the score was, but you know, but they didn't win the game. So, you know, people look at, and how can you deny what TCU did? You can't. I mean, they got embarrassed in the final, but they beat Michigan. They beat them on a neutral field, fair and square. And so, you know, like, I think people define it that way. That's, they used to say this in politics, elections have consequences, and I think, you know, and at the highest level of the sport, they're functionally elections, and they have consequences. And one of the consequences in the case of, in the case of college football is when you don't win the biggest game or you embarrass yourself in the biggest game, which has happened a lot, then, you know, there's consequences to that. And that's what's happened with the Big Ten. The SEC just does not have to change. It doesn't have to change. And I expect it won't. What I would say is the Big Ten needs to take a page out of the SEC's playbook, start the season with better football games, stop playing all of your non-conference games in September. Start the season with better football games or conference games. Near the SEC and start playing your, you know, your FCS team in December or November when they've had the crap beaten out of them and they're not physically ready to play. That's when to play them because they can't really beat you then. They're in the middle of their schedule. Get all the Missouri Valley teams out of your schedule. Don't play them. Like, if that's what you really want to do, then that's what you do. You're never playing North Dakota State again or South Dakota State again. I wouldn't play those teams. I don't know why you would ever give South Dakota State an opportunity to have all these local kids go beat, you know, an FBS team. Iowa was lucky last year that they beat that FDSU. I wouldn't play any of those teams. I'd play the worst FBS team possible. That's how you begin to game the system. I just don't think the Big Ten's interested in that. I think the Big Ten is interested in something else. And so as a result...
Well, Barry Alvarez was for that for a while. Remember when the schedules were supposed to go a certain way in the non-con?
Oh, yeah. And he, you know, Barry Alvarez, you know, he didn't quite learn the feet of Bill Snyder, but he was close. Wisconsin played Colorado two different times in the 90s. And guys just got hammered. This is back when Colorado was good, right? And, I mean, got just hammered. Now, they didn't play Colorado again. They didn't want any part of that. And so he built, you know, hit the strength of his program on easy wins, just like Bill Snyder did. It was a smart strategy. Now, Wisconsin's never won a big game in its life, so there's a reason for that.
Wow.
When you go and have to play those teams. Well, true.
Yeah.
They haven't. You know, I don't know what their best win is over the last 25 years. Yeah, I guess they beat Ohio State in 2010. They beat Miami.
They beat Miami in the bowl game.
That was an overrated Miami team, but they haven't won a big game in their life. And the reason, part of the reason is they don't go play elite teams. They tried there for a little while. You remember when they went and played LSU and Alabama?
Yeah, in the kickoff classic or whatever that was.
They didn't win those games. They did beat LSU, you know, a Packers field, Lambeau field. But they don't test themselves like that. It doesn't go well. They didn't beat Notre Dame a couple years ago. They got embarrassed at Notre Dame a couple years ago. They don't. That's not their MO. They're good in November when you know every other team is beaten up and they can just throw nine, you know, offensive tackles at you. But so you know, I think Alvarez did a great job with that. He's got a statue outside the stadium, deservedly so. They did win their Rose Bowl, you know, kudos to them. He beat UCLA a couple of times, Stanford won. You know, so that's all great. Yeah, maybe Nebraska should do that. Nebraska's probably played too high. I mean, what's Nebraska doing playing a Virginia Tech? I don't know. You know, they didn't win. I remember the game. They probably should have won. But, like, stuff like that. Like, Nebraska's always been the outlier. Nebraska, and this is true of Trev Alberts, too, he wants all the hard games. You know, he'll tell you that. Nebraska needs to be playing USC and UCLA. I was going to get three protected Big Ten opponents, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Nebraska. And Nebraska's going to have one, Iowa. And Nebraska's going to be open to going and getting, you know, having to play Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, USC, UCLA. They're going to play all those. They're going to be more open to playing those teams than Iowa. And Iowa's just going to be, no, we're going to protect our three rivals because we get to be Iowa and we have trophies and we have to maintain those. And Nebraska's going to be like, yeah, we'll go out and play at UCLA or USC in September. Sure. Like, that's Nebraska. And you kind of love Nebraska for being that way.
Sam, good points there. We appreciate your time this morning, as always, here on Monday. As always, you have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Sam.
Take care.
Sam McEwen. Gosh, does Nebraska want an easier schedule just so that they can be...
Well,
is
I remember.
As relevant?
I remember. Was it a cover of Sports Illustrated? It was something about Nebraska one, and it was not the Big Eight. They called it the Big Two.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point we say that, but it always comes back to bite them, it seems, when it comes to schedule talk.
Right. And last year it didn't matter who you played. So we'll take a break. Come back with more Coffee and Cream.